All right, welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapy, expressive therapy, and creative approaches to therapy. My name is Kate Shannon. I am a board-certified music therapist as well as a licensed clinical professional counselor, and I am your host for today. We are going to get really creative in today's episode as we talk with Lauren Graham. She dives into so many cool topics in this episode and covers so much. She talks with us about her work as a therapist, specifically some of her work as a bilingual therapist, her experiences serving abroad. She also shares with us about her awesome website called The Primed Canvas, where she creates downloadable resources in both English and Spanish, and there's so many cool resources there. She also has another website called Art Therapy Shop, where she creates creative arts therapy apparel and really cool coffee mugs, everything you can think of. So many cool things on that website as well for a purchase, so we can promo and walk around with really awesome creative arts therapy based merchandise, and we can continue advocating as we do that, which is really cool. So Lauren is a licensed professional counselor, licensed chemical dependency counselor, and an art therapy registered provisional in Houston, Texas. She specializes in utilizing creative and art therapy-based interventions with children and adolescents. She graduated from the University of Texas at San Antonio with a master's in counseling and attained a postgraduate certification in expressive arts therapy from Prescott College in Arizona. With a passion for creativity and love for sharing, Lauren created an art therapy website called The Primed Canvas. And this website is a creative community and a place to share art therapy directives with other therapists who share a love for the creative process. So this episode is chock full of awesomeness. Before we dive in, I would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor for today's episode, who is MTBC. Just kidding, MTPC. I routinely do that because it's kind of a joke on MTBC, but it's Music Therapy Podcast Collective, MTPC. And if you heard our episode a few weeks ago, you know that we are running a huge sale right now on our shop, because we just launched three amazing pod courses through MTPC. We have courses talking about understanding intersectionality and developing yourself as a music therapist, and understanding your own intersectionalities, and busting through imposter syndrome, and working on your musical skills, and developing therapeutic relationships, and how to develop an inclusive space that is an anti-oppressive, safe and brave space, and understanding neurodiversity and disability culture within our work. So these pod courses, for about another few days by the time this episode is out, from June 1st till June 15th, all of the pod courses in the MTPC shop will be on sale for $20 off. They are all approved, pre-approved for CBMT credits, CMTE credits, whatever you prefer to call them, but continuing education credits for music therapists. They are pre-approved. So once you purchase one and complete all of your materials and do your evaluation form, you get that pretty certificate that you can just easily send in for your credits after your cycle. So very easy to do, and amazing, amazing content from our fellow podcasters over at Voices of Music Therapy, at Able Voice Podcast, and at Navigating Adulthood and IDD. Really, really awesome people, and we have just been so, so grateful to walk with them in this journey, and we're so thankful for the beautiful, beautiful content that they have created and put out. It's all three of them are just like this beautiful, beautiful work of love, for sure. So go check those out. That is in our show notes. Thank you again to MTPC for supporting this episode. And let's dive into today's episode. Okay, Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm so pumped that you're here and going to talk about, we have a bunch of different topics that we're going to cover. So I'm just so appreciative that you're here and going to share your experiences with us today. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. For our listeners, could you tell us a little bit about the work that you do?
Okay. So currently I work at a nonprofit clinic. And so my population is pretty diverse. I actually work with adults at the moment, along with children and teenagers, so I get a lot of experience there. Yeah, and so the clinic is very cool because it's actually in a part of Houston where there's a lot of refugees and immigrants. And so on top of, you know, being able to basically get experience with all ages, I also get to work with refugee families. So it's very nice. I feel that being bilingual, for one, is very helpful because I do have a lot of Spanish-speaking clients at the clinic. And then, you know, refugees, we have people from all over the world. So we use interpreters and, you know, it's a very unique experience to do therapy with families and use an interpreter in our sessions or even do art therapy. I do a lot of creative interventions, definitely with the kids of refugee families because it just makes things a lot easier for me.
Yeah, that sounds really like a very interesting, different dynamic of if you have somebody else in the room interpreting. And then, you know, so cool to hear too, bringing creativity into it of like, there doesn't have to be a lot of communication exchange in that too. What is that like with a different, do you find it changes up the dynamic having an additional person in the room or that communication is different?
I would say that it is. We try very hard, for example, to make sure when we're, you know, using the translator that we're continuing to hold eye contact with the client and make sure that we're talking directly to them, not to the interpreter. But sometimes it's kind of hard to avoid because the client will, you know, naturally become very comfortable with the interpreter because they're able to directly talk to them. So we'll see that they'll start kind of facing, you know, the interpreter, or if it's over the phone, we'll see that they'll start kind of like angling themselves towards the phone. And so we try really hard to just, you know, re-engage them. I think it does change the dynamic a lot. And so I would say that for me, being bilingual and being able to speak Spanish, it's very rewarding because we're like the interpreter slash, you know,
therapist. Yes.
It's like you get me, you're able to listen to what I'm saying in my language and you understand like the sayings that I'm using or the slang that I'm using, like you understand me. And so it's really cool to be able to do both. And of course, you know, it's such a lifesaver to have the interpreters at the clinic and to be able to use the over-the-phone interpretation anytime you need. But I would say that it does cause a little bit of a shift in the dynamic during the session because we have like a third person there.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear that of how, you know, and it makes sense of, you know, a kid might just start to kind of shift and turn towards the third person who they're hearing all of this kind of stuff through, even though you're the one saying it, and then having to like reshift that and kind of refocus that connection.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And that's so powerful too. I would imagine, like you said, as being bilingual, you are like both. You get to kind of have both of those experiences where you can support and, you know, make them feel so heard and validated of like, you get me, that, you know, there's no interpreter needed. Like I, you know, just kind of meeting them where they're at. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny because you would think that when you see like Spanish speaking families, for example, like they would be at the same level as far as like native language, you know, speakers, like you would think that the child also is like very fluent. But it's interesting because you'll have parents that came, you know, from their home countries and they're here with their child for therapy and the child speaks like mostly English and the parent only speaks Spanish and they kind of understand each other somewhat. But sometimes there are even language barriers between the family members. And so it's interesting because I'll sit in the session and I'm going back and forth, like speaking in English to the child, speaking in Spanish to the parent, and then trying to translate to one another, like, mom, you know, you're saying this in Spanish and she's taking it this way. Like she's thinking that you're not really listening to her, but I think that she's not fully understanding what you're telling her. Like it's getting lost in translation.
Yeah. So
that's always interesting. I'm like, how does this work at home? Like, you know, when mom is talking to you or even upset with you and maybe they raise their voice at you in Spanish and they're just going on and on in Spanish and the kid is only understanding pieces of what is being said.
Yeah, because I feel like that is, you know, in households where it's they're speaking the same language, there's still miscommunications, mishearing something, the tone, the way that something was said, there's all those communication pieces that everybody's processing, let alone if there is that difference, then it's like, how does that clear communication happen at home?
Yeah. So it is very interesting. And then, you know, like with the Hispanic or Latino population, a lot of times there's not very much psychoeducation, of course, on mental health or what it is. So I find that very rewarding that I'm able to explain to them in their language, you know, like to tell them in Spanish, like, this is what depression is. This is what it looks like. This is what anxiety looks like. You know, your child has anxiety and this is what's going on. And this is why they're acting different from time to time. These are some of the things that you can do to support them. And sometimes it takes a couple of sessions, of course, because you'll explain this to parents and they're like, but I don't get it. They have everything that they could ever want. Why are they depressed? Or why do they seem very happy sometimes? Like they must not be depressed. So it's very interesting because I get to go through that process with them of continuing to educate them and work with the parent to help them understand what the child is going through and what they can do to help and how to be a little bit more, what's the word, like more open and I guess a little bit more engaged, you know, like in the process of therapy. Like it's not just about you dropping off your child for me to do therapy with them. It's about you being involved too and understanding what's going on.
Yeah, that advocacy piece, that parent education, psychoeducation part of like, if kids are just dropped off and we see them an hour a week, there's only so much, you know, change that we can do. And especially with kids, so much of that change needs to happen at home too. And being able to support parents and not only understanding, but then, like you said, giving them those tools that can help and just continually like make that ripple effect happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Can you tell us about your bilingual art therapy blog and your shop? You do this in person as well, but then you also have a shop and a blog. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what you do with that?
Yeah. So my blog, actually, I feel like it was something that I've always wanted to do. And so I kind of just jumped into it and I thought I'll kind of learn as I go. But I feel like I just like jumped and hit the ground running. Like I was like, let me figure out how to do this. So I kind of learned as I was going. I did the website first, which is a prime canvas, and I got all that set up. And then I thought, well, I really want this to be a blog, though. I don't want it to just be a website. Because, you know, I've always been working in nonprofits. I didn't work like in a private practice or anything where the website would have any purpose in like, you know, like recruiting like for clients or anything like that. So, I did the prime canvas first, and then I came up with the idea to do a blog series, which I named Art Therapy RX. And so I decided I don't want to do just English stuff. I want to do Spanish stuff too, because it's so hard as, you know, bilingual therapist to find any resources in Spanish. And it's a lot of hard work to be sitting in session looking at something written in all English. And I'm trying to translate this to Spanish too, or even like workbook activities, like, you know, it kind of loses its magic when you can't like really print stuff out and give it to the client and then understand that you have to actually sit with them and go through it and, you know, So I decided, I was like, if I'm going to do a blog, it's going to be in both languages. And so although sometimes I'm kind of pulling my hair out because it's a lot of work to go and, you know, make everything in English and then go and translate it. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's very helpful for me too, just because, you know, I'm pretty fluent in Spanish, but I feel like with writing, it's not really my strong point. So I feel like it's been a lot of practice for me too, just to become more fluent in writing it as well. So that was the main purpose. I wanted to, you know, share some creative ideas, some activities that I have been using for a while, you know, with my clients. Just continue learning. I feel like it also gets me very involved in the field and just doing research and seeing what other art therapists are doing, or, you know, what creative interventions I can kind of mix up with therapy. Because I really love Pinterest. Like I love being on Pinterest and pinning all kinds of cool craft ideas. So I'll pin things and say, how can I turn this into like an art therapy intervention? Like, how can I make this therapeutic? Although, you know, with art, it doesn't need a lot. Like the process itself is already therapeutic. But I'm like very big on, I guess, like directed interventions and like thinking kind of like the objective and what I'm doing, having things kind of planned out, which can be good and it can be bad at the same time. I feel like I kind of struggle with the non-directive stuff that I'm like, well, okay, but then the purpose is going to be this, you know, like I have to work on anxiety and this specific skill. So I've been learning over time to kind of let that go too. But I guess the blog is a very good place also for those who are just starting like me, you know, to have some like interventions kind of laid out. Like these are some, you know, activities you can do that might be helpful for your client. So that was the main purpose of the blog, just to be able to share. It's fun. I like, you know, posting articles. It's exciting to post on social media whenever I have like a new article up. Making like cute freebies that are colorful and artsy and sharing that with everyone. That also is very rare. I feel like a lot of times the resources that you find, you have to pay for them. So
definitely. And it's so nice to have like one spot where you can find all those resources. Like you said too, having them in English and Spanish, not only for like as a clinician, if you're Spanish speaking and you have that right there, but then for families too, it's that easy access. And it's so rewarding. It sounds like it's really rewarding to like create. It's another way of being creative in a very different way.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I started it and I thought like, at first, like, I hope that I'm not like taking on too much by doing this blog because, you know, I work full time as well. But I honestly feel like it's therapeutic. I like getting off of work and, you know, spending some evenings working on blog posts, researching, figuring out like what my freebies are going to look like. So it is another way that I can be creative. And I really enjoy it. As far as the shop, I feel like it was something that I kind of started. I think I actually started the shop like in 2019, I think it was. And it was kind of like a very small scale thing that I was just kind of playing around with. Like I had like a little website and I would kind of, you know, post sometimes that I had like, you know, like t-shirts and things like that for sale. But I started to get more and more into it. And so I decided to like relaunch it last year. Which is interesting because I did it like basically in the middle of the pandemic, you know, like I was at home a lot. I was like very worried and stressed like everyone else. And the blog, you know, was keeping me busy, but I always wanted to do the shop as well. So I decided this is like my time. I have a lot of time on my hands right now that I can't go anywhere, that everybody's on quarantine. So I started to put in more work in the website, and I feel like I expanded a lot on what I was doing before because it looks like I think mugs, some shirts, some stickers, and that was about it. And so now I have like t-shirts, I have hoodies, sweatshirts, mugs, face masks, like a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And it's another creative process for me too. I think it's cool to share those things, and I feel like really the mission for the shop is just to basically have like a brand that is, you know, focused on like the healing arts and just making it like cool, because it is very cool. We don't have anything like that where you can say like, I'm going to go buy like an art therapy shirt from this shop. You might find like, somebody like selling something, but it's not like the whole store that's dedicated to that.
Yes, totally. Like one place where, you know, I can go get like art therapy, creative therapy related things. This is where I can go to get that stuff of like swag, you know, all the different things of mugs. And I feel like too, in that way, I love stuff like that because it's like advocacy too, of like, if I have that coffee mug, you know, walking around in my office complex and someone's like, oh, that's, and it's like, yeah, this is made by an art therapist. What's art therapy? And then it just like continues to like, you know, kind of grow after that too. So it's like advocacy in a way too.
Yeah, it is. It's like a conversation starter, you know, somebody sees like something across your shirt and they're like, what is that? Or what's an art therapist? What do they do? Which is like the number one question whenever you do tell someone like, what do you do for a living? You're like, I'm an art therapist. They're like, well, what's that? Do you have to be an artist to do art therapy? And so I think it's cool to wear, like, I'll like, you know, actually order like samples of my shirts and I'll wear them out and I'll get questions and things like that. And so I definitely feel it is like a form of advocacy to let people know, like, we're here, you know, we have a really cool, you know, field where we do help people heal through using the art. And like, you know, an added bonus to the shop too, is that, you know, a percentage of the sales go to nonprofits that also are involved in the creative arts. So I always wanted that to be like the last piece of the puzzle, I guess. I started everything, but I wasn't sure where exactly I was going with it. Like, I wanted it to be advocacy and everything, but I wanted to give back as well. So that's the other part of this too, like helping other nonprofits.
Yeah, totally. That giving back piece of, you know, with a certain percentage going to, it's so cool that it's going to other organizations that support the creative arts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. That's awesome. It's so cool. I will make sure that there is a very quick link for listeners to just hop into your shop so they can check out all of the awesome stuff and then keep those conversation starters going.
Yeah.
Yes. Fun. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about, we had, you had, I think you had touched on this at the beginning, but you had done a therapeutic arts program with the Global Alliance for Africa. Can you tell us a little bit about how that experience kind of like started, how you got involved with it, and what it was like?
Okay. Yeah. So it was 2018, so it was a little while ago. We actually were informed of it through my expressive arts program with Prescott College. And so I think it was like my last semester there, and we got this email from the Global Alliance asking if there were like any students or teachers or anyone that was interested in doing some work in Africa for the healing arts. And so at the time, I just felt like it was like kind of meant for me. And I thought, I've never done anything like this. I actually had never really even traveled to like another country. It's like my first time like leaving the US.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I guess I'm going to go big. Like, this will be my first trip and it'll be like in Africa.
Oh, can I tell you, this is really funny because that exact same thing happened to me too in college. I had never been out of the country. I hadn't even really traveled that far out of like my state, and went to Africa for the first time. It was like the first place that I ever rode a plane, and it was to Africa.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's like what happened to me. I was like, crazy. Like, I just decided to go. And I remember telling my family members, they were like, what are you going to do in Africa? And I was like, well, I'll figure it out. They were like, do you know anybody there? And I was like, no, but I'll meet people once I get there. Like, it'll be okay.
Yes. Yes. I love that. That is such a like, go big or go home, you know, like, all right, I'm going to do it and I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah. So that was like the approach I took. I thought like, this is meant for me. You know, I got the email. I know that they're recruiting students and everyone, you know, but I'll, you know, apply and see what happens. And so it turns out that year there weren't that many applicants. I think there was like maybe a total of 8 of us that ended up being chosen to go. And so it was basically like a, it's kind of like a training. It was a cross-cultural exchange is what they called it. And so basically they recruited students, art therapists, basically any creative healers that were interested in all of the arts, not just, you know, like painting, drawing, but like, you know, there were drama therapists there. There were dance therapists, art therapists. So it was really cool. They recruited the 8 of us and we went to Africa. We were there for like about 10 days. And so the program basically was based on teaching African artists a little bit about what we did in the U.S. as far as using art therapy. And so in Africa, there aren't any art therapists. And so we basically went and we taught them like very foundational, like, you know, theory about like art and how it helps and how it heals. And then they taught us like culturally, like what they do with the healing arts. So it was super cool. Like we would have like, these little like breakout sessions, I guess, like throughout the day. And we would be assigned that breakout session. So like I would have one and like I taught them like an art therapy intervention. And then like later in the afternoon, like one of the African artists would have a breakout session. And basically they would teach us like a traditional dance and we would be like out like dancing and having fun. So it was really cool because it was like a little bit of everything. We would do dancing, we would do art. We had singing as well. We had someone who was doing a lot of like music therapy. So it was really cool. We got to meet, you know, them, and we got pretty close over the 10 days. There were some like sightseeing, I guess, times during the trip. So I feel like it was very eye-opening. I got to do like the training, but at the same time, I got to see Africa. And we had times like where we went into the slums, like in Kagera, and it was just like, you know, like I was like in awe that I was going to all these beautiful places, but then there were these people, you know, that were like, you know, starving and, you know, not living in very great conditions. But I feel like it was a great experience because it taught us, you know, how important it is, you know, to do that type of work, to go out to other countries and help out in whatever way we can. And that's what the programs were for. They were for those children that we were seeing in the slums, basically like, you know, helping them heal and connect with the community by doing lots of healing art activities together.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds like it was really powerful of like not only learning, but then going and like supporting, but then also that learning experience too, in so many different ways of learning the arts from, you know, you're using a different approach and how they use the arts, but then also just kind of seeing a different place and being able to support and learn at the same time.
Yeah. So it was really great. I feel like it was like one of those once in a lifetime experiences. Like I said, I hadn't traveled very much. Like you were saying, like, I think I had barely traveled out of Texas. I had gone to Arizona, like for my program to do art therapy stuff. And I've gone out like maybe to other cities, but never like actually left like that. And so I felt like it was like, it was like just like a really great experience. I kind of look back at it and I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do it, and that I actually was brave enough to just be like, yeah, I'm just going to go. If I get selected, I'm going, and I'll figure it out, you know, once I get there, like I'll be okay.
Yes. Yeah. Do you feel like it has impacted you as a therapist?
I definitely feel like it has. And I feel like, you know, things in life kind of work out kind of funny sometimes. Like I went on my trip, and actually like maybe like a month after I got back from Africa, I switched jobs. And my job became the one here at the, you know, the community clinic, which is with refugees. And so I thought, like, I guess it was just meant for me to have that cross-cultural experience to see what it's like how, you know, to basically make it, you know, when, you know, everybody else speaks a different language, you know. And here I have clients, too, that speak different languages. They're from all over the world. And so I guess it was kind of prepping me for this job that I'm at now. So I think it has shaped me as a therapist. It's made me more, you know, open-minded, made me a lot more grateful that, you know, there are some people living with a lot less than I am, and they're very happy. And so, you know, things don't matter. You know, these materialistic things don't matter.
Yes. Yeah. That's amazing that that kind of rolled out, in that when you got back less than a month later, you have this job that is very demands kind of that cross-cultural perspective, understanding, training, and you were able to be so immersed in that. Sometimes it's like, you know, if we haven't gone to therapy before, we don't know what it's like to like be in the seat or be on the couch. And it's the same thing of like, if we haven't been somewhere where we aren't speaking the primary language, or where we're trying to be understood, like we don't know that experience. And some of our clients are having that experience. So it's really cool to like have that experience and then be able to bring that in and have that within your session.
Yeah, I think it is very important. So like I said, it's just funny how things worked out. I had, you know, I went on the trip and then started that job, you know, started this job. And I thought, wow, like, I guess it was just meant to be. Like, I needed to have that to start this new position. So,
yes, I love that, how that works together of just like, you never know.
Yeah.
It's worth the risk just to see what will happen.
Yeah, I think so too. So I would say that, Yeah, it was just a really great experience, and I'm happy that I was able to do that. And I look forward to maybe one day going back again, you know, to participate again. It's just, you know, with the pandemic and everything, it's been so hard.
Yes. Yeah. Travel's been really limited. Hopefully it will continue to like get better so that those things can open again and we can have some change in that way.
Yes. Yeah. I'm hopeful. I feel like things are getting a little bit more stable. I wouldn't say like completely back to normal. I don't know if we'll have a normal.
Like, I know. Yeah. Like a new normal. It's going to be a different normal that we'll have to get used to.
Yeah. So I always say, like, I'm hopeful that things will become stable because I don't feel like they're going to go back to normal. That normal doesn't exist anymore.
I like that. Stable sounds really nice. That sounds like a really nice place to be after this year.
Yeah, some stability.
Yes. Yes. I'm curious too, continuing on kind of the, you know, working as a bilingual therapist, but also working with refugees. And I'm partly thinking of this too, because I was just reading one of your Santre blogs, your blog post about Santre. Do you find that you tend to use, you know, as an art therapist, you're using lots of different creative mediums, but do you find that there's certain interventions or mediums that you often use a lot or are one of your favorites?
I would have to say that Santre is probably one of the top ones. And I feel like with Santre, there's not a lot of work that you do. I feel like it's mostly the client, like exploring, you know, like their inner experience through what they're creating. Like, you know, the first time that I got introduced to it, I thought it was like so like magical that you're just like picking out little figurines and putting them in sand and it tells like this huge story about you and you don't even realize that it is. And so that one, I would have to say that that's like one of the top ones. And it's mostly because before I even started studying to become an art therapist, I was already using like very creative interventions, like having, you know, my kids draw in session. And it's because I was working with like about, I think it's been like about 5 years now, but I used to work in the immigrant shelter. So I would work with a lot of, you know, Latino children, but some of them were from different countries where they spoke different dialects. And so even though I knew Spanish, that wasn't going to help me because they were from Guatemala, you know, and they were speaking some dialect that, you know, I wasn't aware of. So I actually used Santre a lot with them. And although I couldn't like directly communicate with them, like they were able to at least give me like their story, for example, of how they immigrated from Guatemala to the US, like everything that happened. And they would show me with a little figurines, like, you know, the danger that they were going through and how they felt. So that one, I feel like became my favorite because it just seemed to be the one that just kind of was such a smooth intervention for there being like a language barrier. So that one I loved. And then, I would say that like with non-directive art, I feel like that's the best when you have children that are, for example, like very ambivalent about being in therapy. Like they're not really sure, like if they really want to be there or if they want to open up. And so I always tell like my kids when I start with them, like, I understand that this can be a little bit weird. Like I know I'm a stranger to you and I don't expect you to be like completely open with me from the beginning, but I hope that, you know, at some point you do start to feel comfortable because, you know, I'm not a threat in any way. I'm just here to help you. Yeah. And so I'll always start with like, you know, let's do a drawing together. So we'll do a lot of collaborative drawings where there's no direction. It's just like you make a mark and then I make a mark and we go back and forth until we create something. Mm-hmm. And I'll usually tell them like, no pressure. It doesn't have to even make sense. It could be something random or abstract. Or we can have like weird stuff happening in the picture. It doesn't matter. Like as long as you're having fun and you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So Santre for sure. And I would say like non-directive, like collaborative drawings. Mm-hmm. And one that I really, really love, and I actually did a blog post about it too, is the Don Jones Expressive Arts Assessment.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's really simple. It's just like a really short story and there's four parts and it basically takes you through an adventure. And at the end of each part, there's an obstacle. Like the first one is like, you know, like draw how you would get past like a rushing river. The second one is draw how you get past a wild animal. The third obstacle is getting past like a monster that's guarding a cave. And then the last one is just them drawing like, you know, like what the experience was like and however they wanted to end the story. And so I love that one because it teaches you a lot about like, you know, like problem solving skills, whether they're passive, assertive, aggressive, their imagination. Some kids will come up with completely like imagined situations or superpowers that they have. So it's really cool, you know, to see like what they draw out for each obstacle that's presented.
Yeah, that sounds so interesting of like the how much you can find out resiliency, you know, like I can only imagine what some kids come up with of how they're going to get past some of those different obstacles of like just, you know, and it sounds so free. I love that it gives kids like so much to explore in their own mind, like they can just kind of like explore that imagination.
Yeah, and it feels safe because, you know, instead of telling them like I don't know, like for example, like the confrontation with the wild animal is supposed to like, I guess, represent like just confrontation in general. Like how do you deal with confrontation? Mm-hmm. But it's different if you try to sit down with a kid and ask them like, what do you do when like a problem comes out of nowhere or somebody confronts you about something that they don't like?
Yeah.
Instead you can have them draw it out. And it might be something completely imagined where they have like some kind of superpower or they have like a little companion alongside with them. It's just a lot safer and a lot more fun to, you know, talk about those things through drawing. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like what I found interesting is that you also learn about like their frustration tolerance. So like that intervention in general, like it just seems like each obstacle starts to get a little bit harder as you go. And so sometimes I get kids like kind of like grunting and like, you know, like, I don't know, like, you know, they're getting frustrated. I'm like, don't think about it too much. Don't worry about the drawing so much. Like, just do it. You know, like, what came to mind when I told you that happened? Or they'll ask you a bunch of questions about what's around them. If, you know, this is happening and I'm like, it's up to you, whatever you imagine, you fill in the blanks. And so you can kind of see like how their anxiety level might get a little bit high because I'm not giving them a lot of direction. I'm just telling them to go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's like presenting that opportunity to like work through that emotion in the session of like, I notice you're getting frustrated right now. How, you know, how can we work through this or how can we problem solve this or should we take a couple breaths? Like you get to access that emotion in session by kind of going through that assessment step by step.
Yeah, so I feel like there's a lot of like good learning opportunities there and opportunities for like us as therapists to intervene and say like, you know, you're very frustrated. Like, you know, is there anything that I can do to help or is there something about the story? You know, so many things can happen and I've learned a lot through doing that activity with children. Mm-hmm. You know, not just the problem solving which we're talking about, but just like a lot of other things that might come up as they're trying to work through each obstacle.
Yes, that is awesome. I'm going to make sure to link to that for sure because you said you did a blog post on that one.
Yeah, I did a blog post and I had like a freebie where I had like the little story like written out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one's on my blog and that one's like one of my favorites.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That sounds, I can't wait to like go download that ASAP and like implement it tomorrow. Sounds amazing. What are some of your favorite in your shop or on your blog? What are some of your favorite resources that you've created?
Some of my favorite, I would say that because of the pandemic and how challenging I feel like it's been for us therapists, like I think like some of my favorites are the ones that took me so much time to figure out how to do myself.
Yeah.
So like just researching in general, like when the pandemic happened, like my work went straight into telehealth and I've actually like still been in telehealth. It's been like over a year now. Mm-hmm. So I have not met with any clients like in person and it's been very weird.
Yeah.
And so like I remember when the pandemic started, I thought, well, I never even imagined myself doing telehealth. How am I going to do this? How do I stay creative when I'm not in the same room with a client? Mm. So I would say that my favorite activities would be like all the electronic ones that I found basically because they took me so much, you know, so much work to find.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when the pandemic started, I had like a two-part like blog or two-part to like one blog article. So like one of them was like expressive arts, digital resources. So there were lots of like really cool artsy websites that you can go on to like to make like mandalas, or what were the other ones? I think there were mandalas. There were some other ones where you can just put it, like you could just draw like on the app or on the website. Then there were some other ones that were like more like play. And so there were lots of games that I found that I was using kind of as like incentives, like towards the end of the session, you know, like you did really great. Let's play a game together. And we would be able to play it remotely. So I would say those two were like my favorite posts when I divided it into two parts. And then I did another one. It was like a it was a website, and it was to basically make like a digital journal. And so like you went on the website and you could basically do everything inside the book. You would create the cover, create like what you wanted the inside to look like. You could collage inside of it if you wanted to, or draw, do whatever you wanted basically. And then when you finished it, it had like another option where you could go to the end and you could actually create like a little flipping like book, like the pages would flip and you could just like
Wow.
flip through it. So it was really cool.
Yes. Oh, that's got to be so satisfying. Or like a long-term project too, of like where you could
Yeah.
work on a page, each session, and then like over time you have like this big thing that you kind of flip through still while online, still being able to do that online.
Yeah, so it was really cool, and that website actually was used a lot by teachers during the pandemic. And so like I felt like I was like piggybacking off of a lot of the resources the teachers were using, because they are like awesome. They were so creative during this whole pandemic that I thought if they're using that stuff, like I think I can figure out how to use that for therapy. I can, you know, focus on maybe this skill and I'll use this for that. So I thought like
Yes.
the digital book would be like a great like journal. It could be an art journal. It could even be like a comic book if they wanted to, because there were like different little digital templates they could use to make comic strips inside of it.
Sounds so
Yeah.
fun. Oh my gosh, yes. And I love
Yeah.
that too, that like it's teachers are amazing. I feel like there's so much inspiration from teachers, and I hope they feel that way vice versa, of like they're leaning over to therapists too for ideas. But
Yeah.
when the pandemic started, I remember following like several music teacher blogs and on like Teachers Pay Teachers, because they were like all just using tech so much, and they would have all these online things. And it's that same thing of like, okay, how can I use Google Chrome Lab for therapy? Just shifting it from that education to therapy mindset.
Yeah, so that's how I was. I was like, how can I, you know, make this work for me for my therapy sessions? And so I found those resources. They were very cool. And then, like, I would say, like, my most favorite and I think the most addicting one was using Google Classrooms to make like my own little like bit emoji classroom, or not classroom, but therapy room. And I was like on that forever. Like I started like playing around with it to do my blog, and then I lost hours and hours of my day like adding things to it. I mean, my room was like completely like decorated. I had like an Alexa and everything in like one of my little therapy rooms.
That's so awesome.
So yeah, that one was addicting, but I think that that one was probably one of the funnest ones, and it's very helpful in therapy too to have things like that. So
Yes. So with those rooms, like the Bitmoji rooms, and I know I've seen some other people do it on like a Google Slides, where they kind of made like a room where you can like go in and click different things. Is it like something that you're sharing on the screen, and then kids kind of get to choose what they want to do, and it takes you to different experiences?
Yeah, I did it through the Google Slides. Like I guess that's like I don't know if that's a standard way, but that's the way that I taught myself. I used Google
Okay.
Slides, and
Yeah.
so I basically added different things to the room. Like I made my own little bit emoji character that looked like me, and I found like furniture and different games and things like that that I could put in there. And so yeah, the client would go and they'd tell you like what they wanted to click on. And you would take them to that activity. So that activity kind of linked up with the other resources I had found at the beginning of the pandemic, because I could just put like a game and it would take them to that link, to that game that I found electronically. Yeah. Or if they wanted to do like an art journal, I would put like a little journal in the, you know, in the room, and then they click it and it take them to that link to make their art journal if they wanted to.
Yes. So it's nice to like, it's like a jumping off point. It gives that choice of like what you want to do. And then you've got those kind of like electronic choices to back them up of whatever they pick through there.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. I love that. That's, it's so fun to think of. I mean, you know, in a year, the difference of a year, I know in February, if I would have thought I would be making things like Google Slide Classroom stuff to try to figure out, it's so much we've had to learn and to shift and to adapt to going from full in person to like all of a sudden telehealth.
Yeah, it has been. I look back at the year and I can't even like, it feels like it was like very long last year, but then it went really fast at the same time. It was like a very odd year. And I look back at all the things I've learned, and I've learned a whole lot just in that year of like, you know, at the beginning, struggling, like thinking like, how am I going to prepare myself for my sessions? Like, how do I keep my kids engaged in my sessions and they don't like click off or walk off? You know, because I'm not there to actually like intervene and redirect them. I have to engage them enough to where they stay, you know?
Yes. I know, I work with a lot of little ones, and, you know, just the clothes, you know, when you just see the hand going up to the top of the laptop and it's like, no, don't close me. It is really like there's an element of being powerless and being out of control. Like when we're in person, we have so much more control of the environment, and we just don't in telehealth.
No, you don't. Yeah. I feel like you see so much more like when you do telehealth. Because I've definitely had kids like try to like end session soon, or I've had kids tell me their camera's broken and it's not. They just don't want to have the camera on because they feel uncomfortable. And I was like, I totally get it. Like, I'm not a camera person either. And I know that it's kind of awkward, but just know that this is just to help you, you know, like, and there were some sessions that I would even have kids like tell me, like, you know, if I, you know, can I have my camera on just for part of the session or whatever it was? And sometimes I would allow them if they were just very anxious and uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's, I think a lot of, if we're not able to be like in the home, I know with my last job, I was doing some in-home stuff. And when you're doing in-home work, you really get to, you're a fly on the wall in not only spending time with the client, but like really getting to learn their environment. And I feel like telehealth has made that happen for almost every, you know, kid that we serve, as we're kind of in the home and seeing what it's like and how they experience it a little bit more when they're in that context.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely been a big learning curve. But like you said, I love how your favorite resources have been the ones where like you've learned the most too throughout this whole time.
Yeah, because I felt like it was like just like rewarding to say like, oh, I found something cool now that I can use, or this will go so, like, this will make this more easier for me, you know, if I, like, for example, like, I had found, like, this digital whiteboard, and I know that Zoom has that, but we weren't using Zoom in our clinic, so I'm like, I don't have that function, so how do I get this kid to draw where I can actually actively see them drawing? And so I found, like, a whiteboard, and they were drawing while I was talking to them, or they would talk to me while they're drawing. And it was cool to be able to see what they were making, you know, during the session, instead of me telling them, like, can you move the camera down or angle it so I can see what you're doing? Or can you, you know, show me what you were working on, because I'm blind. I don't know, you know, what they're doing on the table. I can't see.
Yes. Oh, that is so. And I felt the same way. We weren't using Zoom. So having like Zoom has some awesome features, but if you're not using it, you have to like find other ways. And that is so true of having to like, you know, moving the camera, or can you, you know, like, oh, I can't see you or I can't see it, to be able to just like, nope, I see it. I got it. It just takes away so many barriers when you can make that smoother like that.
Yeah. Yes, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, you know, kids again in person, which is what we're moving towards now. Yeah. But it feels like it's been such a slow process, like keep on putting it off. We were told, like, I think like maybe 4 or 5 months ago that we were going to start seeing, you know, our clients in person, and that didn't happen. And mm-hmm. now I can see that we're starting to get there. They got us like little air purifiers, I guess, to help.
Yeah.
So I think we're starting to ease into that, which I'm excited about. I feel like I'm ready to start seeing my clients in person again.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I just started this week with like 2 clients in person, and it was like, this is so weird and different, but exciting and fun. And it's been, I feel really grateful to like have had both experiences now of like being comfortable with telehealth. I live in a very, right outside of the city that I live in is very rural. So I feel like I can still access and support families and kids who may not have access to like coming in to get therapy services. So it feels like it's opened up this whole new thing for therapists too, of just more accessibility and being able to support and not being afraid of it now as a therapist of like, okay, I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that my clinic in particular is thinking of leaving it as an option. You know,
yeah. We'll
mostly see people in office, and, you know, my population as well. You know, there are some that have transportation problems. They don't have a car, or they, you know, they ride the metro here in Houston and it's not reliable sometimes. Or, you know, we have like Lyft services in Houston for like those who, you know, have disabilities. And so it's, you know, a hassle. And so some of them have told me that they would rather just stay doing telehealth, which I have no problem with. You know, I understand that some, you know, people have trouble getting to the clinic. So I'm hoping that we are able to keep it, you know, like they're hoping for, I guess. I guess it's a matter of insurance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Just
whether they'll cover it, which I'm hoping they will.
I hope so too, because I feel like it's been a game changer. And it's funny because I don't know if we would have gotten to this place if we hadn't have been forced to like move to it. But now that like it's like, okay, it works, we, you know, have to get creative and think of new ways of doing it, but it works. And if it's accessible, then hopefully insurance companies will see that and keep it as an option too.
Yeah, I hope so. I know that a lot of therapists also, some have gotten really comfortable with telehealth and would rather stay doing telehealth than see clients
in person. Yes, especially I know like people who are like immunocompromised or, you know, just having, it's been, you know, a good change for them too. So it's great that we can have that flexibility in our profession too, if it kind of supports us as well.
I mean, after this whole year and that, well, I guess a little bit over a year of doing telehealth, I feel like I'm a lot more confident. And, you know, if this were the case and, you know, I at some point needed to do telehealth or, you know, my job required it, I at least have the experience of doing it. And so I feel a lot more comfortable. So.
Agreed. So it's a nice skill to have. It's something, an additional skill that we have now.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I love it. Well, this has been so lovely. All of the stuff that you've shared with us. I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners, there's going to be a ton of links in our show notes, but if listeners are interested in following you on Instagram or reaching out to you, what is the best way to get a hold of you or follow you?
Okay. So they can follow me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as the Art Therapy Intern. And then I have my blog website, which is theprimecanvas.com. And that's where they can, you know, have access to all my freebies and read all my blog articles. And then my shop is thearttherapyshop.com. And so my shop basically has a little bit of everything. I have, you know, t-shirts and sweatshirts, mugs, tote bags, face masks.
Do you have a favorite item in your shop right now?
My favorite item, I would say, is the collection that I came up with for, it's called Art Heals.
Yeah.
And it's a really cute, I don't know why, I really love that design. Like, I've created a couple of designs so far, but that's like my favorite. I like the colors that I chose. And it seems to be one of like the best selling designs. I get a lot of purchase that one.
Yeah.
So, I actually have my own sweatshirt too with that design. So
awesome. That would be my favorite one. Very, very cool. Awesome. Well, I will be sure to link to all of those things, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and all of that stuff too. So listeners can follow you, reach out, buy some awesome stuff from the shop, get those freebies. So that will be awesome. And just thank you so much for sharing what you do and your passions and your experiences. This has been really lovely having you on.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy that you asked me to be on. This is actually my first podcast. I was really excited to share.
Yay! Oh, I love it. I'm going to pause this here. All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Lauren. She was so wonderful to talk with, and I just absolutely loved hearing about her experiences and her creative drive and passion to make all these awesome materials and all this merch in what she does with both of her websites, The Primed Canvas and theArtTherapyShop.com. So go check out her stuff and all of those awesome resources. Go support her if you can. All of those links will be in our show notes. Again, a shout out to MTPC. Those pod courses will only be on sale for a few more days. So get in there and check that out. Bookmark it. Tuesday the 15th is the last day that you can get those on sale. Also, just a friendly reminder that we always have in our show notes, we have an anonymous survey that you can fill out to let us know your thoughts, concerns, questions, suggestions, and feedback. We love hearing from you. We always are excited to get emails from anybody, so feel free to reach out with anything that you would like, and you can do that also. You can email me at kate@creativetherapyumbrella.com. So whatever way feels comfortable, regardless, I would love to hear from you. All right, don't forget to check out those show notes. Thank you so much for being a listener and a supporter for what we do over here at Creative Therapy Umbrella. We are endlessly, endlessly, endlessly grateful and so thankful that we get to continue doing this and create the content that we do. And we have you to thank for that. So thank you. And of course, be creative.